Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, now in the second part of the program, let's recite the Quran. We are going to listen to the recitation of Surah Al-Zalzala, recited by Sheikh Anwar Shahat. Let's enjoy it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إذا زلزلت الأرض زلزالها وأخرجت الأرض أثقالها وقال الإنسان ما لها يومئذ تحدث أخبارها بأن ربك أوحى لها بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إذا زلزلت الأرض زلزالها وأخرجت الأرض أثقالها وقال الإنسان ما إذا زلزلت الأرض زلزالها وأخرجت الأرض أثقالها وقال الإنسان ما لها يومئذ تحدث بأن ربك أوحى لها يومئذ يصدر الناس أشتاتا ليروا فمن يعمل مثقال ذرة خيرا يره ومن يعمل مثقال ذرة شرا يره صدق الله العلي العظيم.
Dear audience, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. What you just listened to was recitation of Surah Al-Zalzalah, recited by Sheikh Anwar Shahat. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, this surah begins with a verse that has a lot of the letter Zay in it. إِذَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا This sound of Zay right after each other, it gives the impression of an earthquake. The sound of an earthquake, like a buzzing sound,
mm-hmm.
Like when an earthquake comes. You know, there's this distinct sound. I remember once, like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, there was an earthquake in Qom, and the sound of it was something that resembled a zzz sound. I remember we were at our house, and then the whole how started shaking.
Actually, it resembles vibration.
Vibration, exactly. Whenever your cell phones vibrate, it makes a buzzing sound.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and that's the case with an earthquake. So just by this verse, Allah is depicting an earthquake, the sound of an earthquake. And Sheikh Anwar Shahad used the two maqams, Sika and Bayati. Okay.
Now let's talk about the tajweed points, brother.
Yes. Al-Ardu. Al-Ardu. Okay, we have a Ra, which is Sakin, preceded by a Fatha. Okay. So, and the letter of the fatha is a hamza. Hamza has to be pronounced with tarqiq. Never could you find a hamza which is pronounced with tafkhim. Alif al-mat could be pronounced with tafkhim, but not hamza, the letter hamza.
That's right.
Okay, so we have to pronounce the hamza with tarqiq, but we have to pronounce the ra with tafkhim. And
right.
Also the laad with tafkhim.
Thickness.
إِذَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا وَأَخْرَجَتِ الْأَرْضُ أَثْقَالَهَا. Now, we have several letters of tafkhim in these verses, especially the second verse. وَأَخْ The kha has tafkhim because it is a letter of istirla. The degree of the tafkhim is not so much because the kha is sakin. It has a sukun. It is unvoweled.
Yeah, so it's the second lowest level.
Kha. We have the second lowest level of tafkhim. Mm-hmm. And we said that in order to actually apply the second lowest level of tafkhim, we basically pronounce the letter of istirla without changing the shape of the lips.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The lips are in a neutral position. They're not spread. They're not open vertically. They're just in a neutral position.
Wa akh
rajatil. Arudu. Again, we have a wad and also ra with tafkhim. And finally, we have qaf with tafkhim with an aliful med.
Athqala.
With a long vowel alif. And so we have the highest level of tafkhim for the qaf. Athqalaha. وقال again we have وقال وقال الإنسان ما لها. You know, when you keep on pronouncing letters with tarqiq and tafkhim right after another,
it makes a kind of wave.
It's a wave, yeah, and it's like an earthquake. Earthquake is like, you know, it has a wave, so it reminds us of that as well. It's not, you know, monotonous, and it's not just tarqiq. We keep having tafkhim, tarqiq. We, you know, it alternates between tafkhim and tarqiq.
وَقَالَ
الْإِنسَانُ مَا لَهَا يَوْمَئِذٍ تُحَدِّثُ أَخْبَارَهَا. So we keep having tafkhim, tarqiq. This makes this surah very beautiful and rhythmic. Just like I said, it's like the wave, like
That's
you
right.
said, like of an earthquake. يَوْمَئِذٍ تُحَدِّثُ. We have a rule of nun sakina here, which is...
Because we have a tanween here.
Yes, we have a tanween, so we have a rule of nun sakina, because tanween and nun sakina are...
The same.
Essentially the same. Because a tanween is, in fact, a short vowel plus a nun sakina.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of writing the nun sakina, they write the same short vowel twice.
That's right.
Okay, on top of each other. So, we have two kasras. We have a tanween of kasra followed by ta, which is a letter of ikhfa.
Concealment.
And as a result, we have to pronounce the nun sakin of the tanween with ikhfa. We have to approximate the place of articulation of the next letter and at the same time make a nasal sound for two vowel counts. يَوْمَئِذٍ تُحَدِّثُ أَخْبَارَهَا. See, you don't place the tongue in the place of articulation of ta. You don't say, يَوْمَئِذٍ. See, it gets really close, but it doesn't touch. And the sound is a lot different.
Yeah, we are not making noon sound completely.
Yes, the nasalization is partial.
Mm-hmm.
It's enthemi, it's oronasal. It's half, actually it's mostly in the nose, and some of it also comes from the mouth.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان هو القرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق
I'm waking up for Fajr. Gotta make wudu, gotta pray my sunnah. Got me ghusl, gotta clip my nails. Looking outside, the sun is rising. Up in the sky, everybody's rushing. Gotta get down to the masjid. Gotta say salam to the imam. Sitting in the first saf, chilling in the back saf. Gotta make my mind up, do what the prophet did. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make dhikr on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah, gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to the ajr. Miss Wakim, Miss Wakim,
yeah!
Miss Wakim, Miss Wakim,
whoa!
Pray, 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 pray. Gotta read Surah the Kahf. 12:45, the imam's on the minbar, talking about something like fiqh as a cat. They're whispering, chatting from the crowd. Don't they know that it's a haram? I stand up, you stand up. Prayer's about to start on the Qamat al-Salah. Foot to foot, shoulder to shoulder. Just don't step on me. Sitting in the first saf, chilling in the back saf. Gotta make my mind up, do what the Prophet did. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah, gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to the ajr. Miss Wakim, Miss Wakim,
yeah!
Miss Wakim, Miss Wakim,
whoa!
Pray, 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 pray. Gotta read Surah the Kahf. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah, gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah, gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy.
Nasir Khosrow Street is the oldest
largest street in Tehran. It extends from Imam Khomeini Square to 15 Khordad Street in Tehran's Bazaar District. Along the way are some of the most iconic buildings and places of the capital, such as Darul Funun School, Sarai Roshan, Shamsul Emare Building, and Marvi Alley.
Nasser Khosrow is more than just a street. You just need to walk from one end to another in order to travel to the past without even leaving the present. Join me in this historic journey.
The construction of Nasser Khosrow Street dates back to 1906. Before that date, the street was part of a large ditch in this area. After the construction of new trenches, they filled the ditch and it became Nasiriyeh Street because it was built by the order of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar.
The best way to know the central part of a city is to visit its historical places. Darul Funun School, the first modern school of Iran, which was founded in 1851 by Mirza Taqi Khan Amir Kabir.
Muhammad Taqi Amir Nizam, known as Amir Kabir, was the prime minister of Iran during the reign of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar. During his time, Amir Kabir exercised administrative programs, cultural and economic reforms for the country. And certainly, his most important work was the foundation of Darul Funun. Darul Funun School played a major role in the process of modernization of Iran. We continue our journey on the road to the south. It is interesting that the first pharmacy, the first printing press, and the first school of Iran were all in this street. In its central section, most buildings date back to the early 20th century, and some of these historical buildings have been preserved.
Almost towards the middle of the Nasser Khosrow Street, Sarai Roshan rises as a historical symbol of this area, one of the first commercial buildings of the capital city. Its unique style is inspired by Gothic architecture.
Only 2 to 3 minutes walk from Sarai Roshan, we find another unique building, which is called Shamsul Emare.
In this street, you can enjoy the architecture of a building called Shamsul Emare, or the Edifice of the Sun. Shamsul Emare is one of the most impressive structures of the Gulistan Palace, which was built around 150 years ago by the order of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar. I'm sure he had a perfect view of the city of Tehran when he was standing up there.
Shamsul Emare is the first 5-story building in the capital, and at the time was considered the tallest building in Tehran. The building combines traditional Iranian architecture with European one. The facade of this building is decorated with bricks and colorful tiles with some beautiful paintings.
Famous Marvi Alley is located right across the street to Shamsul Emare building. Here you can find many different shops and boutiques for all different tastes and budgets. This part of the market attracts tourists and customers from different socioeconomic levels.
Marvi School is located in the same alley, and it is one of the oldest seminaries in Iran. This school was built almost about 200 years ago. The Marvi School is a 4,500 square meters space and has a capacity for about 200 students. The schoolyard is a square garden and it includes several rooms, a library consisting of old books, and small pond in the middle. before I say goodbye to this street, I'm going to try some street food here because Tehran's Bazaar district is famous for its tasty foods. I was told that the falafel sandwich of this area is just awesome. And indeed it is, so I hope you get a chance to try it too. Shahriyar Azimi for Iran.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting it. And my guest speakers, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. And the pleasure is all mine. Sayyid Abdullah, how are you? And assalamu alaikum, greetings to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. One of the movies that we decided actually to start criticizing is, a fairly old one, What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward, featuring actors and actresses such as Robin Williams, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Jessica Brooks Grant, to just name a few. IMDb gave this movie 7 points out of 10, while Rotten Tomatoes gave this movie 52%, and Prime Video 7 out of 10. The film tells the story of Chris Nielsen, a man who dies in a car accident and enters a vibrant afterlife, only to discover his wife, Annie, has committed suicide out of grief. He embarks on a quest to find and reunite with her in the afterlife. That's about the plot of this movie. And before we get on with our program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, we'd like to have a little break by listening to a short part of this movie or trailer of the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward. Stay with us.
The
moment that comes for everyone. Has come for Chris Nielsen.
You've died, Chris.
If heaven were a place of beauty...
Oh!
Boy, I screwed up. I'm in dog heaven.
...and wonder...
Nice place you got here.
No. Nice place you got here. We all paint our own surroundings. You're the first guy I know to use real paint.
Where you felt no fear.
I'm gonna drown.
Can't. You're already dead.
Oh.
And knew only joy.
I can fly.
Yeah! It's your world!
Oh. Woo!
Could you forget the past?
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Winston Ward. As you know, we didn't finish the criticism of this movie in the last episode of Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, and we'd like to continue with our questions and the critique of this movie. Brother Yasser, I'm going to ask you a very difficult question.
Okay.
Do we have any tradition, any, let's say, account, historical, religious, spiritual, mystical account, regarding the type of communication which is achieved in the afterlife? Is it in the form of language, or is telepathy, or something else, or in the form of thought, so, as some people say?
So, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That's one, again, one of the mysteries of death. First of all, we need to understand that this movie depicts of the afterlife,
yes,
as just being the function of the brain and so on and so forth, and thoughts, that is incorrect according to the Islamic tradition. The Islamic tradition is clear,
mm-hmm,
that the human being has two facets to their existence, one being the physical aspect of their existence, the other being the soul or the ruh, the nafs, whatever,
yes,
you want to call it in the Kalami sense. Yes, these words have different meanings in the other sciences, but in the science of theology and
mm-hmm
in the Kalam, they all mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone passes away, obviously that physical body is gone.
Yes.
It's gone. However, we do know from particular accounts, tradition from the Quran al-Majid, from traditions, that we believe in what is known as this bodily resurrection. And what does that actually mean? Doesn't mean that you'll have the same body that you will that you had,
yes,
or has the same qualities,
mm-hmm,
of the body that is here in the,
yes,
material world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a type of form, a vehicle, a vessel by which the soul has to be carried in.
Yes.
Again, understanding the different realms of existence. So this, we're looking at the first realm of existence after the material realm, which is the alam al-misal. So in that alam al-misal, where most of these philosophers and urafa will say that the hereafter will take place,
mm-hmm,
and which some of the urafa said is like same concept as this movie, that you are creating your own heaven and hell,
right,
same as the movie tries to depict anyway,
mm-hmm,
that you are creating it. And we have many traditions like this in,
mm-hmm,
terms of the person with the actions in this world, right at this very moment, are creating their own heaven or hell,
exactly,
right in this moment now.
Yes.
But to answer your question, at that particular moment in time, we do have certain ahadith indicating conversations,
mm-hmm,
of people. For example, there's one tradition that says that the people will be able to see the imams, the prophets, people they've seen before. In the Quran al-Majid, there is actually a verse that says the people of heaven will be looking down at the people of hell and saying, you know?
Right.
You know, what's up, basically.
Yes.
So there's a communication now. Exactly how that communication takes place is not known.
Mm.
Because the Asad Hadith says, oh, the language of paradise is Arabic.
Yeah.
But does it necessarily have to be Arabic?
No.
Why Arabic? Is it necessary that communication takes place the same way as me and you are communicating,
yes,
right now? Understand, the way me and you are communicating right now, there is a process, i.e., I have to first imagine those words,
yes,
understand the meaning of it goes very fast, obviously,
yeah,
and then transfer those meanings that I have from my soul to you.
Yeah.
Then you have to always get the same process of understanding it. Is that the process that's going to happen in the hereafter or no? It's not necessary to be,
yeah,
that. Is that just by me and you being in the same room together, I,
yeah,
already communicate and you communicate, you understanding what I want to say? You understanding what we, there's an understanding, there's a closeness.
Uh-huh.
So it may not necessarily be language like this.
Yes.
But communication doesn't, and again, telepathy, because there's no such thing as brain firing itself, whatever you want to call it. But it's a form of communication.
I
exactly
see
how two souls communicate doesn't necessarily, even in this world, there are souls that communicate.
Yeah.
Without language.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. Without language. They communicate. Yeah. I know exactly what that person is feeling, you know what I'm feeling. So why is that something unimaginable in the hereafter?
With my educational background in language, you know, I asked this question, and I know there's a huge difference between language and communication. Yeah. That's why I asked this question in the form of communication, not languages, because languages, in fact, take time and
this a means of communication.
And it needs some conditions or preconditions that needs to be actually met. And we don't know whether there is time, place, or whatever. Are there other dimensions in the afterlife? That's another question. Sayyid Abdullah, let me ask you this question. What is the significance of the nature or visual beauty of heaven in the movie?
From their perspective, from our perspective,
both. Do they correspond? Like,
yeah, pretty much. Because see, the idea is that Allah Subhanahu wa Taala for us, He promised. Because human beings, we ourselves are visual.
Mm-hmm.
We see, we visualize. Now, obviously, this is another discussion. What is the eyes that see or the soul that see? And how does that manifest itself in the afterlife? Because obviously the body will change. We're going to have a different entity altogether. We're going to look different. So what sees? But obviously Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He focuses on the visual aspect of heaven. How it's built and from what it's built. And the diamond and emeralds and this and that.
Mm.
And the beauties.
Mm.
So obviously there's something that we as human beings are attracted to, which is the imagery of things and beautiful things.
Mm.
And in that movie, they tried their best. I mean, considering that the year it was released, 2009, they didn't do much effects, but they tried their best.
Yes.
To show you what heaven could look like. I mean, they failed miserably, but it was a good attempt.
Mm.
You know, trees and water and waterfalls and people flying.
Mm.
That's it. That's the main theme of heaven, is that you have the ability to fly. Beside that, you see, you're sitting next to each other playing music. That's what one of the guys was doing, which seemed really boring to be in heaven. So they could not project it correctly. But obviously, they did understand that there is this human innate towards beauty that they needed to show.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like I said, they tried to manifest that as much as they could. And these things, like I said, whether I can digest it, I would draw. There are more beautiful scenes on earth.
Yeah.
Rather than what the movie actually projected.
How would you justify heaven to people living in Switzerland?
Yeah, I know. For me, it was actually depressing. The sunset and the thing was kind of depressing. Like, dude, if I was in the Bahamas, that would be like heaven. You know what I mean? If I was in the Caribbean, that would be heaven.
And not to mention Australia is also beautiful.
Yeah, Australia, for example, you've got the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
I'm like, so they tried, but obviously they failed.
It was an honest attempt.
It was a good attempt. But like I said, so the main thing that they were trying to actually show in terms of heaven is the fact that you can fly.
Uh-huh.
Okay. People just flying around.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break, and then we'll get back and ask more questions regarding the movie, What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Winston Ward, in the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
I need Annie. That'll change in time. Time does not exist here. And wherever it went, it's not going to make me need Annie any less.
Or would you journey beyond heaven and hell?
You never see her.
I'm her soulmate. I can find her.
To get it back.
All you're good for is your wife loves you.
You just kept me there.
Robin Williams.
It's about not giving up.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
He's never been anywhere like this before.
No, neither have you.
I'm not leaving him.
Annabella Sciorra.
Across whatever distance there is, I send you my love.
She's fine. You can do it. I believe in you.
I'm still here, babe. I still exist.
What dreams may come.
We Welcome back to the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Said Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Winston Ward. Brother Yasser, what is the significance of the children's presence in the afterlife? Do we get to see our children even after we die?
Look, it's possible. Mm-hmm. But again, it depends on their own actions, their own kind of, deeds that they did in this world.
Yes.
No, it's not so easy just to say, oh, you will definitely see them somewhere else. Everybody will be answerable for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many verses that says that on the day of judgment, the mother will run away from her son.
Yes.
You know? They'll just run, right?
Yeah.
Because the point is that, you know, this is it's a place of fear, a place of questioning. Again, this the symbols, but the symbols in the Quran al-Majid and the Hadith are showing a reality. That is all that you are on your own.
Mm.
You're going to be by yourself.
Right.
No one is going to be able to assist you.
Yes.
Obviously, under certain conditions and so on and so forth. But the possibility is there if, for example, the family was a... That's why one of the important aspects of Islam is to have a family environment where everybody is going in the same objective with the same goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's very likely that whole family will be in the same place.
Right.
Why not? Up and down, whatever. And it's possible to them see them again. Yes, mm-hmm. Why not?
Thank you. Said Abdullah, is the last and quick question I'm going to ask you here at the end of this episode. What does the hell sequence symbolize? I asked you a question before the break about heaven.
Yeah.
And now...
But
how
hell.
Is hell?
Yeah. Well, based on the movie, they try to show you the levels of despair that people go through and their mindset of like how bad they are,
right.
And it depends on how they were feeling, they would go on these levels,
mm-hmm.
or at least in the consequences, which is a quite similar to from an Islamic perspective as well, because we do know hell has layers, right?
Yes.
And each layer is different. And people, depends on what actions they've committed, each would go to a different layer. Now, from an Islamic perspective, we've been told by the Hadith that for those who commit, for example, suicide, will go directly to hell,
yes.
to the bottom of hell. So there are layers depending on how much you despair and how much consequences you have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what the movie they're trying to show, that you begin with for slowly until you get to the worst stage.
I see. Thank you very much, Said Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, criticizing the movie What Dreams May Come, producing 1998, directed by Winston Ward. Of course, we haven't finished the criticism of this movie, and we'll hope to do it next time in the upcoming episodes. Have a nice time. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Can we not see how the planets look like diamonds in the sky? And everything on earth was created for you and I. Can we not see? Merely waiting for the final day to arrive. To arrive. Do we feel a deeper meaning to it all? And in our creation, there are no flaws. smiling at your fellow man, or looking up at the velvet sky, and sometimes it makes me wonder why we're all still here. Do we feel a deeper meaning? Think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game?
Good morning to you all. Greetings from Tehran. You are listening to Iran Radio. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Many academic traditions, including the distinction between graduates and undergraduates, began at Islamic University Al-Azhar, the resplendent university in Cairo, Egypt. The university was founded in the 10th century and is renowned for its philosophical and theoretical scholarship. Algebra, from the Arabic al-jabr, originated in the Islamic world. Although Muslims are often associated with the Arab world, fewer than 15% of Muslims are Arabs. Muslims are found among virtually all ethnic groups, nationalities, and countries. We start this hour's lineup with Israel Watch. The program critically analyzes Zionist media reports about current events and issues in the West Asia region. They will be followed by our varied radio productions feature. After that, we have A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran as well as inspirational poetry and stories. And we round up this hour's programs with our radio productions feature. Stay with us for the next hour.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew media focused on the Iranian foreign minister's visit to Paris and on the path of the aggression against Gaza and Lebanon and on the concerns in the occupation entity over Hezbollah's possible response to the assassination of the senior commander Haytham Tabtabai. In addition to Trump's attempts to accelerate normalization between Saudi Arabia and the Israeli entity. These were among the topics highlighted in the comments of analysts in Hebrew media, and we will discuss them today with Dr. Mohammad Qasem, writer and political analyst, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr.
Good morning.
Mohammad. The visit of Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi to Paris was a main point of interest in the Hebrew media, which viewed Iran as still politically and militarily strong, and that Araghchi's talks in France will come from a position of Iranian strength, not the opposite. Well, Dr. Mohammad, is the Iranian visit or the Iranian Foreign Minister's visit to France a bad sign to Israel?
It can be looked in two ways. Some Israelis consider that it is very important, and they consider that Iran is still strong. And the other, they say that when Araghchi goes to France and to the three Europeans means that they are in a weak position. So this is what is going on in the media of Israel. But in reality, the French, British, and the German, they are anxious of the growing power of Iran. And they know that when they had heard of Araghchi that we are still fine and we are and our budget is three times tripled from before and so on. And they know that the Iran has escalated their nuclear production as well as their missiles and so on. And they are afraid also that these inventions or these military projects can be transferred or that can be given to Russia. And that's why they are afraid that this support to Russia would help in the war that's going on with Ukraine, as well as this will threaten Europe. Mm-hmm. This is why they consider that we have to calm down. Although the three had ordered more sanctions on Iran, and they considered that by these sanctions, Iran would submit. But on the contrary, the sanctions did give a kind of morale to Iran, and they are going there.
But isn't that contradictory? Because you've highlighted that they are the ones, part of the countries that that imposed sanctions on Iran, and now this visit as if giving a different impression.
Yeah, this is on one side. On the other side, they say that Iran is weak, the other analysis.
Okay.
But what we know is that they are afraid that Iran also would retaliate or would attack Israel, and that's why also they are afraid that...
Okay, and how would Israel view this, Dr. Mohammed? Israelis, it's a bad sign to them?
I said it. There are opposite opinions in Israel. Mm. Some consider that Israel, Iran is weak now.
Okay.
That's why it is going to Europe.
Okay, and some
and the others say
it
no, it is not. It is strong, and they are going. And Araghchi goes to Europe or to France in order to ask for lessening down the sanctions and to have better relations for that. And they are afraid. The Israelis are afraid of any escalation that Iran would do, especially after the what had been mentioned by the leaders of Iran after the attack of the Lebanese leader when he was assassinated, and they said that we have to revenge.
Okay.
And this would make the Israelis very cautious and anxious.
Okay. However, Israeli concern over a possible Hezbollah response to the attack on the southern suburb of Beirut and the assassination of the martyr commander Abu Ali Tabtaba'i continued to dominate political and media discussion in the entity, and the Hebrew media reflected this state of anxiety. How do you expect the situation to develop on the Lebanese-Israeli front in light of the assassination of Tabtaba'i, martyr Tabtaba'i?
Of course, the Israelis are now considering the situation that they did not kill or did not assassinate a symbolic military person. No, they had. They do know that they have assassinated the chief of staff, and this is a very and his loss or his death is a serious blow to the Lebanese. That's why they are anxious that the
how would the response look
the
like?
Response will be the same. They are but here what's going on? The resistance in Lebanon or Hezbollah do know. Hezbollah knows that there are still 5 points that Israel are occupying, that they had lost one of the leaders and so on, even though the Iranians had publicly said that they called for revenge, as I said before, and so on. But Hezbollah now is calculating it very carefully, considering that they had lost, and at the same time they have to do something that would make not a reward, but at least that they compensate this loss in an attack. That's why they are calculating it very carefully and very seriously.
Yes, but would the Israelis read it in such a manner? Would it read it as a wisdom and patience from Hezbollah's side? Or would it view it as weakness?
No, they are seeing
retreating from retaliation.
The same as they are looking to the visit of Araghchi to France. There are two opinions in the regime, the Israeli regime. They consider that it is a sign of weakness and they can do nothing and so on. Mm-hmm. And the other, they say, no, be careful. The Hezbollah is still strong. Is still having rockets. He's still having drones. We have to take care. That's why they are afraid now of the 5 points in the south. They are afraid of the northern area in Palestine and so on. That's why they are making a kind of warning to these people to be careful if there will be a kind of retaliation from Hezbollah.
And they were doing maneuvers also at the border.
Of course, they are doing all these things. Okay. That's why
they are on alert.
They are alert now, okay. And at the same time, we have to say, we can say it briefly, all options are open.
Okay, Israeli social media focused on the state of alert and fear over Hezbollah's potential response to the assassination of the martyr Tabtawai. And here are some of the comments.
Ami Rojax. Hezbollah is astonishing in its ability to survive and in the decentralization of its leadership. And no matter how many of its leaders Israel assassinates, it always rises again and refuses to give up its weapons. Alon Fishman. There was a war in Lebanon that ended with our withdrawal from most areas in exchange for Lebanon committing to dismantle Hezbollah. But what we see now is that Hezbollah is arming itself. Daniel Amram. The alert level in the north was raised after the assassination of Hezbollah's chief of staff, out of fear of rocket fire into the depth, or infiltration into Israeli territory, or into positions controlled by the army in southern Lebanon.
How would you comment on these remarks highlighted by Israeli people and stating that there's the Israeli government asked the north settlers to actually stay on alert? And how do you think they view this assassination of a martyr Tabtabai, in fear or in pride?
In both. They did find that the Hezbollah is still strong, is still able, can retaliate, can attack, and so on. And at the same time, some others consider that by assassinating this leader or the other leaders, this will weaken them. But if you go to the mass media or to the masses in the occupied Palestine or the Israeli regime, they consider that Hezbollah is still a very critical threat to them. And that's why they are planning to control or to make a siege or kind to raise the problems with the Americans.
Yes, but some of these remarks actually highlight that Netanyahu's his own credits are still high.
Of course.
Especially after such an assassination.
Of course. You know.
Will he gain more support with these kind of moves?
If we want to take it into the Israelis, they feel a kind of ecstasy when they know that they had lost this one. But when they think deeply, they say that this is a new threat. Mm-hmm. And some others would say that Netanyahu is leading them or pulling their legs to accept this situation for political interests of
to what
Netanyahu
extent
himself.
Will these actions and decisions made by Netanyahu, whether domestically or in the region, add to his own election campaign or to his own election ambition?
That's it. You summarized that.
Yes.
What Netanyahu?
That's his utmost goal, Dr. Muhammad.
To Netanyahu.
That's the utmost goal behind these assassinations. To preserve his own seat.
There is another thing. There is also the court. There is how he is accused of many crimes and corruption and so on. But now he is raising this issue because the elections are so close. And that's why he is doing his best to keep his his picture.
Would it benefit him if Hezbollah retaliated?
I think that Hezbollah will study that well. I cannot say what Hezbollah will do, but according to me,
do you think that Netanyahu wants to drag them into a war?
It. This is one of the
to benefit in the elections.
Of course. You see, there is a kind of pulling the legs of Hezbollah that Netanyahu would have an excuse to say that, you see, I told you that this is a threat and that's all. This is well studied by the leaders of Hezbollah.
Okay.
And they are studying it carefully and objectively.
Okay, the growing relations between the United States and Saudi Arabia are a major interest for the Israeli entity as they facilitate the path towards Saudi-Israeli normalization, according to one commentator in Hebrew media. Do you really think that Zionists are convinced that strengthening U.S.-Saudi relations serves Israeli interest?
Yes. You see, your questions are really of double face.
Yes.
You cannot take one point of that. Some Israelis and most of the leaders consider that the more the relation between Saudi Arabia and the United States is going in a track that doesn't make any challenge or any threat to the Israeli regime.
Yes.
Because they consider that this is not only, this is not military, this is not politically, it is mostly economic. And that's why Trump is pulling the money or taking the money of the Saudi Arabians and the Gulf for their interests. And at the same time, they are considering that the more relation between the United States and Saudi Arabia will make the deterrence against Iran. And this will keep Iran aside, the more they are involved in that. But at the same time, Israel is worried.
Why?
Worried because there is a kind of the missile systems that will be done in the will be produced in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but whatever is produced is given to the United States of the America of America, and the United States of America is giving it to Israel.
Of course.
So Israelis are benefiting both ways.
Benefit, but at the same time, they know that the Saudi Arabia has limits in doing that. Saudi Arabia is a kind of guardian to the holy places of the Islamic world, and at the same time, they have the atomic. Now they are planning to have atomic plants and so on for a kind of not military, but at least they are afraid of that. And
okay, but there is afraid, another. Yes, please continue.
They are afraid that the United States would leverage or would lessen the sanctions on Iran by the pressure that Bin Salman is trying to do. Bin Salman has also interests in having good relations with Iran.
Yes.
That's why they are afraid that this might also lead Iran to have more power, and this will threaten Israel.
Okay,
and
what do you think of the claim that normalizing with Israel will actually strengthen Saudi national security? Because also there are different views to what the analysis you've just given.
Of course, look, the Saudis are keeping the door open.